and to give an opportunity to Adventist members that maybe they've never had before, which is, hey, here's a way that I can share the origins of my faith, the thing that is me, in a way I don't feel embarrassed about.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Seeking What They Sought. I'm joined today by Anthony, and we have some very special guests with us. We have Kyle Portberry, director of Tell the World and The Hopeful, and along with Kevin Christensen, executive producer and head of Hope Studios, which is Kevin, tell us what Hope Studios is.
Yeah, so Hope Studios is the new cinematic arm of Hope Channel International. So our goal is branching out beyond just linear or broadcast TV, cable, satellite, anything that has kind of a timeline on it, and getting our messages of eternal hope onto places where people are now watching. So streaming platforms, cinemas, honestly, whatever comes next. We don't care what the platform is. We really care about reaching people where they are.
Awesome. Super cool.
So not happen to like buy a special satellite dish?
Yeah, no. It's for the five people still watching on satellite. Yeah.
Right. Awesome. Well, thank you guys for joining us today.
I, by the way, was so tempted to make a joke just then, and I'm being very good.
Are you holding it back? I feel like if you're holding it back, it's worth telling because
well, I was about to say, funny. That's what you do. I can't be a part of this. I'm really sorry, guys. I have to go.
Like, I thought we were taking this VHS.
If somebody had explained to me that this was the cinematic arm, I would have not been a part of it.
Right.
Thank you guys for coming on. Real quick to kick things off.
Yes.
It's just a little icebreaker question. What is your earliest memory with filmmaking?
I think the earliest one of mine, and I don't even think I did this for at the time what you would typically class as a love of cinema. I just worked out we got a VHS player, hilariously, that had it was a two-deck VHS player, and I worked out that you could, like I was doing at the time with my tape player, you could record things in there, and then I worked out that you could record them and you could put other music to it. So I remember I took a whole bunch of clips from Die Hard, The Fugitive, and Rambo First Blood Part 1. And I put them
And how old were you at this time?
I like maybe 14 or 15 or something. And okay. Then I
thought so you were going to say 4 or 5.
I created a montage in the oldest school way that you possibly can and then put it to a remix of La Fortuna, which came out in like the 90s sometime. And somewhere my parents reminded me, they're like, we found the videotape the other day somewhere, but they can't play it because they don't have a VHS machine anymore.
So. And you got all these videos from the local church library, right? That's
that. No, like I right. discovered.
You Australians, man, you guys are different.
My parents would go flea market shopping like when we would go on holidays. And I remember, I think it was about when I was 14 or 15, I discovered that, I discovered Die Hard for the first time at a flea market, like an outdoor flea market in a place called Phillip Island in Victoria where I grew up.
And oh, that's great. Well, they had a Christmas section.
I know, right? I remember sitting there and watching Die Hard for the first time ever and just being like, what is this? This is the greatest thing ever. And then I would go, obviously, and then try and find The Fugitive I found somewhere in a... I had to tape it because that was one of the examples of a VHS tape that was broken, right? So I worked out that you could stick sticky tape back over there and that section would be like, but you would essentially be able to watch it still. Like it would just be a moment where it would be like not very great and then
wow.
It would be back. Yeah.
That's a deep 90s cut. Like the Gen Z, our Gen Z listeners listening to you right now, they have no idea. They don't even know.
Yeah, they were the good old days.
Gen Z, so Kyle
stuff.
Basically cap-cutted it with tape. Oh,
there we go.
There
nice.
There you go. I don't even know what that means.
It's a good
Kevin.
Translation.
There you go. Yeah.
So my takeaway from that is that Die Hard was the biggest inspiration for Tell the World.
For Tell the World, yeah.
Die
Fugitive.
No, the Fugitive was.
Yeah, the Fugitive was. I think that those films, and they are the bigger inspiration for why The Hopeful is what it is today, right? Like, so that is, and you should get on and ask Kevin his question. Otherwise, I'll be talking about that for forever and a day. But it really is the inspiration, the art of the 90-minute film is a really big deal to me. And it has become more of a big deal the older I've gotten, because it's such almost a lost art. Like, everyone now wants to tell 3-hour movies.
I would say even further. Everyone now wants to tell 10-hour movies because they all want a
series. They want a TV series.
An hour long episode each. And you're like, quite frankly, most of the time, does your story merit 10 hours? I mean, that's where. We have people that come in and they're like, oh, I've got a great, everyone has a great story. Like, usually by the time they're bringing us a story,
I actually disagree.
No one's bringing
seriously?
You a story going like, hey, I think this story is bad, but I'm going to give it to you. Like, you obviously thought it was good before you brought it.
I actually disagree. And it's okay that not everybody does have a great story to tell, right? I think that we have convinced ourselves that everybody can tell stories and everybody is a filmmaker or everybody's a novelist or everybody can write poems or everybody. I mean, not everybody can, right?
Your story, it probably is a good story to someone, at least it was to you, but is that story a short story in like Guide magazine level story? Is that a chapter in like a multi-section hey, we're doing snippets, testimony stories, whatever, and it's a good five page chapter in something? Is it a book? Is it actually a movie? Is it actually 10 part? And obviously there are some that are great for 10 hours worth. Well, let's be honest, some of these are 3, 4, 5, 7 seasons in, so you're talking 40 hours worth of stuff. Not every story is that. And I think that's part of the challenge for a lot of creatives is they go, I have a great story, but they don't always know, okay, what's the right medium for telling that story in? And some stuff is better even as an audio drama. I'm a big fan of audio drama. So there's some stuff that's like, you know what? That actually is not the right fit for taking it to cinema. Or sometimes they're really interested in telling, like, especially with historical stuff, there's a lot of, it's like, ooh, we see that people are watching like movies on Netflix, or they're like watching movies in theaters, and I've got something that I really want to take a like History Channel type approach to it. And I go, that's great, but that's what History Channel is for. Like, that's what that type of thing is for. So when you say, oh, we're gonna try and take one and fit it into the other, it's the same reason why you don't take an action film and try and put it on Hallmark Channel. Like, it's just not the right fit for it. You got to know where the audience is, not only in terms of the channel and the page, but also knowing even the format of how to present that.
I will read a post sometimes that will have as much impact on something that I'm doing at that point in life as any other form that I'm engaging with that impacts me. So I think it's just having the understanding and the respect, as Kevin was saying, for the art form that you're doing in the platform that you're doing it on, for whatever that reason being. And I think if you do that, you'll end up getting stuff that resonates with people, right? Because that's actually all that matters, is it, does this resonate with more than just me?
And case in point, a lot of Adventists talk about, we're always talking about the great controversy. We're talking about the impact of it, the effectiveness of it. People are sharing that book just as much, or in Adventist circles, more than the Bible. So, to reference that, there is a chapter, I don't remember which chapter it is, early in the beginning, where, she talks about this painting that's set up in the Times Square, or set up in the central square of the town. And it's this painting of the Pope, and it's a painting of Jesus, riding in on the donkey in his simplicity. And she talks about the fact that that one painting said more than any of the sermons given. And, you know, and again, it goes back to what Kyle was saying of knowing the art form, knowing the medium for which you're communicating and understanding the power that that can have. That one painting with no words on it had more impact on people than a 2-hour sermon that probably was given that weekend. You know, Kyle and I have done a number of test screenings with The Hopeful, and every audience reacts differently. You know, there's some parts where we get people that are cracking up and laughing, and you take it to another audience and they don't seem to find it funny. And you're like, oh, okay, well, that moment hit really well with that audience. But then this other poignant moment comes in, and I mean, people have literally walked out of the theater in tears saying that moment that you had in there, it touched me and it impacted me. And, you know, and so it's exciting now to know that we have something that through the music, through the storytelling, through just some of the various elements that are represented, we don't know how it's going to impact everyone. And we can't spell that out. But we have enough in there that when you make relatable stories, someone's going to be touched by something with it.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I'd probably qualify that.
Thanks for sharing, man.
I mean, there's, you know, I don't know how many screenings we did last year, previews, maybe 10 to 15, I think. There's a spine line of moments that absolutely, I know without a shadow of a doubt, everyone will respond to it exactly the same way, regardless of who they are or where they're from, right? But there is always, every audience is unique, right? So as Kevin was saying, you'll be sitting in there and there are some moments where, like, somebody was, you know, a group of people or someone was, like, responding in a certain way in a previous screening, and now you've moved to another city and people respond to that moment completely differently, or they find something else that nobody or no other audience has responded to, you know? And I think that's fascinating. I mean, the ride that is cinema, you know, like you're very deliberate when you're crafting a story for cinema, because it's very different to any other medium. You know, for a start, you know that there's going to be a group of people sitting in there watching it together. So it's different already to, for, you know, maximum of a couple of people who would watch it in your house, right? Like, this is a group event. And so you've got to look at it almost like a ride, you know, that you're taking a group of people on, and you have to chart that course, right? Like, it's got to be a very deliberate, you know, and this is why I like the 90-minute format, because it's classic three-act structure, you know? And so you can really craft and build ebbs and flows of energy during the course of that 90 minutes for people, so that, you know, by the time they get out of it, they've had this fabulous journey to places they've never been with, people that they've never met, but they've got enough relatable touch points to their own life to go, oh yeah, because I anticipate stuff and I get disappointed about things and I persevere. I wonder who I would be out of this cast of characters, right? Because I'm recognizing that they have all the same hopes and dreams and thoughts and, you know, feelings that I do, and doubts and fears and love and romance and, you know. And then it becomes a universal, like, want and drive that I'm connecting with, right? Like, so you don't have to go, and I think this is the big difference that people are going to discover if they saw Tell the World, the miniseries, and then they go and watch The Hopeful, is that it doesn't actually matter whether you're Adventist or atheist or Hindu or Buddhist or Muslim. It's irrelevant, right? You're watching people that respond to the world just the same as you do, you know? And you're going to walk out of there and be like, well, you know, that was a great story. Like, I may not want to become an Adventist, but wow. Like, I'm now thinking to myself, well, in those moments when I have to persevere through doubt and mistrust and try and work out how I get to this thing that I thought I was moving towards that shifted on me, you know, how do I respond to that? Am I someone that gives up really easily? Oh man, I always figured that I would be like the person that stuck with it, and maybe I'm not. Right. And that's what I love about cinema. It affords us an opportunity to question who we are and what we would do in a similar circumstance in our own life. You know, I loved that when I walked out of Oppenheimer. I remember sitting there going, the thing that got me was like the moment where they're talking about the possibility, as small as it was, that if we press this button, the entire world may blow up. Yeah, right? Like it might set off a train reaction that literally fries everything on the planet. And I'm like, it's a special kind of person, really, isn't it? Who goes, well, we're never going to know unless we push it.
Right.
You know, like that's not the majority of people, right? Like if you sat down and had that conversation with me, I'd be like, yeah, too risky, right? I don't think we know enough about this. Let's not push that button, you know? So I think in discovering who you are in those moments, in a safe environment, right, where you get to question without consequence, you know, and you get to feel emotions that you don't normally get to feel without consequence, right? Like you can have your soul ripped out by a moment in cinema and it can be extremely like impactful, but then you walk out and you're like, but that didn't really happen, did it? So it's all right. But I got to assess my response to that, and now I'm reflecting on that and I'm wondering how I would cope in a similar situation. You know, and I think that it's that, and that's very personal, right? Like cinema allows you the personal reflection time that I think a lot of other medium doesn't, you know, it's very particular in that regard. And then it allows you to debate with people about it afterwards, and there's no wrong or right answer.
Yeah? Right.
It's the way that you responded to those moments is the important thing.
Just to interrupt you, Kyle, you know, since you brought it up already, just for our listeners who may not be familiar with you guys and what you're doing, what you've been working on, you guys, for clarity, you guys are part of the production and directing team. And by team, I mean you guys, right?
Well, it's us and about like 200 plus other people at this point, right? Because
there's about 5 minutes of credits you'll sit through. So it's two people would be a severe understatement.
You couldn't possibly tell a story for cinema from the perspective of two people. And this is what I love about filmmaking, right? Like, so yes, I'm the director, but I also get to work with people across a broad range of cinema experience, right? That are working well outside of this story, you know?
Right.
Brett Manson, for instance, who color graded the film, did Elvis for Baz Luhrmann. And then one of my favorite films of the last 10 years, The King with Timothy Chalamet and Joel Edgerton.
Incredible
film. If you haven't seen that on Netflix, go and check it out. It's a beautiful film. But what he brings to it when you're sitting in your 110 hours of color grade together is 25 plus years of experience on how to draw out more from the moment. Visually, you know, so you'll sit there and you'll have a conversation and you'll say something thematically or about the way that you want people to feel in that moment. And he'll be like, oh, how's that? And you just sit there and you're just like, the film just went from being a really good looking BBC period drama to now a mid-budget studio picture. Like, how does that work? You know, and it's the same thing in edit. It's the same thing in sound post. When you get to work with people who do this for a living across a range of stories, they bring a wealth of knowledge and understanding of how, because again, just because it's an Advent story doesn't mean we haven't seen these things before, right? Again, if you said to me,
to interrupt, just want to bring clarity to our listeners who may not be familiar with you guys. You guys have created a film called The Hopeful. And it is a 90-minute retelling of your previous work, Tell the World, which is sort of a, you know, Adventist origin story, so to speak.
I don't know if
you would describe it that way.
I wouldn't describe it as a retelling. So what Tell the World was a 6-part miniseries that was originally intended for online and it had a really specific remit, which was to tell the historical points of that story, right? And at the same time, we also filmed a feature film, and it just takes a long time for those two things to play out, right? So like Tell the World had to do its thing for a while, and then it took me a long time to kind of get the pieces of the puzzle together to be able to realize the cinematic telling of And it's not even the same story, right? It's like Tell the World looks at that story from one angle. And it's almost like what we did with The Hopeful is that we walked around the back of it. And then we went up and we had a look down there. And then we went, ooh, those characters that aren't really major characters potentially in Tell the World are actually really interesting. So let's look at this story through their eye instead of through this eye. You know,
and one of the other things with that was saying, you know, what makes sense to reaching people with this? Because,
Sorry, Kevin, to interrupt. I'm curious if you guys could kind of take some steps backwards and talk to us kind of about how did this even come to fruition at all? Like, why? Like, how did this happen? Why did you do it? Why is it important to you? And then maybe it will circle back and get to where you're
heading. Kyle, how about you tackle in like a couple minutes up to the point of our conversation at Southwestern?
Yes. Yeah. So I think the simplest way to describe it, and you know, it's always hard because you don't want to, they are very, very different and you don't want to take away from one, you know, because they're unique in their own flavor. But I think that the big point of difference is I, as a filmmaker, felt that there was more humanity to be discovered in this story than was possible with it being guided by church administration. Because you got to understand, Tell the World only exists because some really passionate administrators in Australia took a chance and went, we want to tell this story. We feel like there's something incredibly inspiring for Adventists in our history, right? In the way that our forebears saw the world, you know, like there's something to be gained from reconnecting with that, you know. And there's absolutely something beautiful in that. The challenge that you run into when that process is guided by administration, I mean, they're not filmmakers and they're not artists. You know, and so when 20 people have got the final cut of something, it's always going to be a compromise, right? You're never getting the singular voice of an individual who's going, this is my response to these people and this story. And that's the big difference. That's what you get with The Hopeful. And I always felt that we had done that story a disservice by not giving it the singular voice of one person, rightly or wrongly, right? Like it could have been anyone and it just so happened that it was me, you know? And so there's no point feeling bad about that and going, oh, well, you know, I probably, you know, there's people who are more capable. Forget that, right? Like, you know, you've all been gifted with certain things. And I like to say, like, I laugh about this with my wife all the time. I've got to a point now at 46, I actually can't do anything else anymore. I've spent too much time now investing in this. I'm actually no good at anything else, you know? So it's the kind of thing, either you lean into it and just accept that this is what you do and you've put that 10,000 hours of time into it. So, you know, I don't think it's cocky. It's just going, I know how to tell this story, you know? And I think up until the point where Kevin was just saying he and I met and had a conversation.
He showed me his concept of what it would be as a feature film. And I basically went, wow, that's great. Hope it happens someday.
Yeah.
You know, and then left. Cause like, I wasn't in any position to do anything at the time. Fast forward a number of years. Shortly before COVID, I had a conversation with some individuals that were involved with various media ministries within the NAD and the GC. And so they had invited me to dinner to kind of talk about stuff. And I was pretty straightforward with things. I said, look, I tell you this very much out of love. I'm born and raised Seventh-day Adventist, like went to an Adventist academy, went to Southern Adventist University. We are in this supposedly this, you know, age of storytelling, the explosion of media, content is king. And yet there were more opportunities for Adventist storytellers in my grandfather's day than there are now. What is wrong with that? You know,
well,
I told them,
right? Like we got scared because you can't control that message or what people are going to think, right?
I actually think it was financial. I don't think it was just fear. I mean, there's fear, but there was some fear of of fear of losing each other.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Well, no, this is why it works, right? Like people get like confused, I think, about disagreement. You know, we talked about this before, you know,
we started
talking about it, right? Like it's not like Kevin and I always agree on everything. Like we will have robust conversation and discussion. You know, clearly, because that's why it works, right? Like I respect his opinion and he respects mine, but that doesn't mean that we're not going to challenge each other on whether or not like what we think is. And I think the second that you don't want to be challenged by someone else and you're so close to it must be this way or no other way, you're never going to get something that other people want to engage with. It will always feel closed off.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's where we see people that win the battle and lose the war. And they go, well, I told that guy, you know, I got him set straight. And you're like, no, you just got him to stop talking. That's what you got him to do. And now he's probably stopped working with you, or he stopped attending your church, or he stopped hanging out in your group. And what did you accomplish with that? I love someone talked about, they said, why did it take 30 years before Jesus started his ministry? Because he was spending 30 years walking and talking with people. He spent 30 years listening before he started speaking. And which that's a generalization, because we know that when he was a kid, he was speaking there. But I don't think he was a mute for 30 years. But, you know, essentially taking that time to really understand people before saying, okay, I'm going to start into my full-time ministry with this. Or I'm gonna understand what people are interested in before we dive into this. And so, you know,
can I say something really controversial that is just sparked by something you just said then, Kevin? I think the easiest way to describe the difference between tell the world and the hopeful is in the names. So think about the two names that we just said. One is tell the world and the other is the hopeful. And I think that actually tells you everything you need to know about the difference between those two stories.
That's really intriguing, and I want to. Okay, wait. What? Let's circle back to how did we go from you guys having that conversation at Southwestern to it becoming a reality, and then we can.
Well, and I'm specifically interested in, because you guys are essentially doing a 2-day theatrical run.
Yes.
With this film, right? And I'm curious, what is your motivation, your kind of strategy behind? Let's take this to cinemas, you know, for a kind of a 2-day event for people to go see. What's the strategy and the motivation behind?
And there actually are, we have what, 10 cities that are already extending it into a full week run, I think.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. That number right, Kyle? 10?
Yeah.
So, I mean, part of it, you know, because we have people that go, why is it only 2 nights? And it's a business thing, you know, the theaters are not
you've got to prove you can stay on the screens longer, basically.
it's supply and demand. And so, you know, also for anyone listening to this who goes, we need more Adventist films out there, we need our message in more public spaces, if you're not showing up supporting the things that we're doing, then don't be surprised if it doesn't go places, you know. So if we don't show up to theaters, we don't get additional dates, you know, running. If we don't show up to even the 2 days that we have, and people go, well, I'm just going to wait for it to go on Netflix. If you can't show up to the theater, why would you show up to Netflix? Netflix isn't going to be interested, because they go, well, no one cared about it in theaters, so why would we go after it, you know? And Netflix is not YouTube, where you can just hit upload. And so, you know, it's this waterfall, or it's this river, you know, and you can go down the river, but you can't go up the river.
Yeah, so, you can't go back up. It's not like salmon spawning, right? Like there's no, if you start on YouTube for free, that is where you end.
That's where you end, you know? Yeah.
And you've also not given it the value that's, you know, Kevin and I worked the entirety of last year to get this thing to cinema screens, because we recognize the value of it. Like our story is valuable. You know, and if you don't treat it with the value that it's, you know, somebody said the other day, they were like, it is completely abhorrent that you're trying to make money off this and not just giving it away for free. And I just laughed to myself. I didn't even respond to it. I'm like, you know, do you go to work and have a job? You know, like, or are you just expecting that everybody just like does everything for nothing? Like, how are you going to get something made for nothing?
But even further than that, I take the example of the, you know, the couch that's on the side of the street that says free on it, and then you add $100 and all of a sudden it disappears, right? There's like, there's something associated with when something, when you pay for something, the free gym membership, you never use. The $100 a month gym membership that, you know, you're like, ooh, that's, but I made a commitment, you show up for it. And there's something associated with value today where, when we bring something to someone that looks like it's delivered in cheap packaging or it's free, people go, well, how should I know that what's inside is valuable? If we value our message, yeah, let's not deliver it in cheap packaging.
You've not even told me that that's valuable.
And I had someone who talked about this with me. So we worked with Types and Symbols to do the Hopeful Edition of Steps to Christ. Where it kind of ties in with the film. There's a little different design on it. There's a foreword by Kyle at the front. There's a full page that folds out to be Jay and Andrew's ship. And I was talking with someone about this. They're not expensive books, but they're also not free. And this guy at a church, he was like, oh man, this is great, but I really wish we had like a free sharing book version of this. And I was like, brother, we've had those for a while.
They end up in garbage.
It's not new
bins.
Friend. But you got to understand that
Jesus outside the UN.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, you've got to understand that in today's day and age, when you go and you give someone something for free, they go, well, this doesn't look valuable. So why should I take my precious time and pour it into it? You give someone something that's a nicely designed copy of something that looks like you might have paid something for it. And suddenly it feels like a gift. And it's like, oh, okay, you valued this. So maybe I should at least consider valuing it.
So is the a part of the thought process with a theater release being that, I mean, because I'm curious, especially from a, you know, evangelistic tool that I'm sure is kind of at the core behind this project, how you see a theatrical release playing into evangelism. Especially since you know, this isn't something that like the Adventist Church has really done before, at least to my knowledge, in a long time, at least. Release itself controversial in a lot of areas
but
of Adventism.
It's relational, right? Like, and that's the whole point of why you go to cinema, because you know, gone are the days where you can. And with this, it locks 100% into what we were just talking about. Then, right? You shove a book at someone as they're walking down the street. Right? That is not relational. You don't know each other. So why would I even bother looking at this thing that you shoved at me? Because I've got no frame of reference for you even. So like, why would I take seriously the thing that you're trying to shove down my throat? Versus we go and we sit in a car on the way to the cinema together and we're going to eat out afterwards, right? And then we're naturally going to have a conversation about the thing that we just saw. Like, that is relational. And it's also not me inviting you into my house, which we may be uncomfortable with at this point, right? It's certainly not me inviting you to church, which I would not be comfortable with, you know, particularly if we've only just met and this is like, you know, a really recent connection that you've made with somebody. And so I think by design from the outset, this was designed for people to be in relation to other people around, you know, and cinema is actually the perfect like space for that because it's an event, right? Like we're going out to it. We have to put the kids in like, you know, with the grandparents. It's gonna be parking. It's going to be all these things. So if I go along and I don't get something of value out of that experience, if I don't feel like I got transported to somewhere I couldn't be if I was sitting at home on my couch, half distracted by my phone, you know, so that I think for both Kevin and I, it was hugely important that this enabled relationship in a very meaningful, tangible way. And that's why, you know, personal evangelism, I think we've misunderstood the purpose of evangelism. It's not to shove information down each other's throat. It's actually to spend time with each other and learn something about them as well, right? You know, like it's not just a one-way street of me broadcasting to you. It's a dialogue. It's a discussion. Like, what do you think? What do I think? How do I feel about this? How do you feel about this? You know, does this make sense? Does that make sense? Does none of it make any sense, right? Like, So unless you can invest time with somebody and actually get to know them and be a part of their world and their experience, like, why would they have any time for you and the information that you're trying to give them about this crazy, like, lifestyle choice potentially that you're asking
and
them to consider?
And taking that further, the Evangelism Institute talked about the fact that, you know, the tactics that we used back in the 60s and 70s, we reached the heart through the head. So you had all of this arguing truth, right?
Even the fact
so
that
you were arguing
as
creationism
word.
Versus evolution. It was, you know, we have apologetics. It was, I'm going to argue my way to being right. And then when mm-hmm. I convince you with enough information, then you're going to be won over and then you're going to bring your heart on board. And that, you know, to some extent worked. That was kind of the thinking of the culture of the time, that sort of modernist culture. And now they talk about, we live in a postmodern world. We live in a post-Christian world. So what happens when you walk up to someone and you go, I have truth? What do? They go, great. Whose truth? Your truth, mm-hmm. my truth, their truth. Who's paying for that truth? You know, who's the bias behind the truth? So when mm-hmm. people are getting blasted mm-hmm. by so many pieces of information and you go, well, I'm just going to give them new information. I can take my phone, go like this and scroll up. And I just got more information in about half a second than probably what you're going to hand me. So this idea of, whoa, we've got something unique with information. That's not what's winning people over. And again, this is not me saying this. This is what I've picked up from, this is what the Evangelism Institute experts are saying. They said, guys, we have to flip the model.
Kevin, for people who are not familiar, what is the Evangelism Institute? What is that?
So there's a couple different ones. There's one that's on the like general conference level. It's the global, I might be using the name wrong. It's like the Global Evangelism Institute. And they work with church leaders. I believe it's actually a required training session for certain church leaders that get to a high level of responsibility. I'm not there yet, so I didn't go to this, but I had leaders who I work for that went to this, and they brought some of those experts in to talk to us. Because one of the big conversations right now is contextualization. We as a church have really struggled to contextualize what we have. We go, well, this worked for someone in the 60s and 70s, or this worked for this specific ethnic group. And it's definitely going to work across the board. And surprise, it doesn't.
Do you know what works for everybody?
Stories.
But when you get in personal conversation with people, it literally works for everybody, right? And when you stop talking about evangelism, quote unquote, and if you're listening to this and not watching, I just did the quotation marks with my fingers. but we have developed a whole jargon around something that actually is so simple, right? Like, we call it tactics, and we're like tools, and we're like, we've got all of these resources, and we've got stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And it's actually this simple. It's like, yeah, but do you have time to go and grab a coffee with somebody and like actually listen to what's going on in their life, to even know what it might be that you could offer them, right? Because they might be sitting there and they might be going through a traumatic life experience at the moment, and you're trying to like shove some theology down their throat, or actually what they need at the moment is someone to just sit there and listen to them and be a friend, you know, and not actually have an agenda around that. And I think if we simply reframed the way that we think about how we're relationing as people who also happen to be Christian, right?
Kyle, are you putting forth
Christian who happen to be people, which I think is a very different thing.
Sort of a paradigm of film as relational evangelism, or like, how would you
100%? And
how,
because you're showing people who are just like you and me, right? Which is why we go to the cinema. We go to the cinema because we want to be transported somewhere that we've never been, but we want to be guided by people who we relate to through that, you know? And that's the same thing as going to the cinema with the people that we take. Like, we want to go and we want to break bread together afterwards. We want to travel in the car because we want to connect with people, right? Like, we're social beings. And the second that you break that social aspect of that, there's a reason why. You know, when you have a look at the Gospels, what were they always doing? They were wandering around and they were eating. Literally, every story was like, here we are in like some seaside village and we're chatting and then we're going to find where we're going to have lunch, right? Literally the story of humanity, you know? So why
and I
are
think
we...
that's part of the challenge that our church has struggled with is we started to use media as a substitute for personal evangelism.
For personal evangelism.
Guess I'm right about that.
It's well, let me just send this video to you. Let me you know, knock on your door and hand a book to you. Let me, you know, because media takes a lot of forms. Yeah. Ooh, I'm going to send them this. I'm going to advertise this to the community and someone's going to get it and they're just going to, you know, read it or watch it or listen to it and their life is going to be changed. Even though we all know the data that shows that it's like, what, 5 or 7 years of a journey for on average for someone having a conversion process. And so I don't know where we got this idea that you just hand something to one person and whether that's a DVD or a book or whatever, and it's going to like dramatically, you know, change their life. I think that it's something where we get people invited into a space together. That's why the cinema is perfect for this.
Yeah.
Because the cinema is the last place left that people will put down their phones and actually pay attention to someone else's worldview, whether they will end up agreeing with it or not. It's the last space left that people will actually give it their undivided attention and give it a chance. You know, I give the example of Barbie. I say, look, whether you loved it or you hated it, people
talked about it.
It's very true.
Right.
Yeah.
And the cinema is the new big tent. You know, when we look back at why did we do big tent evangelism? It was because the big tent was where people came to share entertainment. You know, the circus went through there. Mm. It's where people came to share their political perspectives on stuff. But it's also where people came to share their religious messages on things. And so, you know, we don't really have tents anymore. And actually, there's a great example of an early missionary who went over to the UK and tried to do big tent evangelism. And this is during Ellen White's day.
Yeah.
And he goes over there and he's like, I'm going to do big tent evangelism. And the people were like, I don't think that's a good idea. And he was like, no. Like this is what we did. You know, we've always done it this way. And this is what works, right? Doesn't sound much different than today. And they said, you know, you really should be renting out essentially the theater halls. And they were like, no, we don't, that's not going to work. So he rents out this big tent and invites, you know, the townspeople to come to it and people show up. But only one particular group shows up and it's a non-educated group. It's a kind of classless group, so to speak. And they show up and they can't read. They're completely illiterate. And so he hands out all this material and no one can read it and no one knows what they're talking about. And finally someone local, you know, tells him, look, the things that are shown in tents here are a bit uncouth. They are rather irreputable.
The cheap entertainments for the masses.
It's not the type of entertainment you would bring your family to, let's just say.
Kind of place the Guardian Angel would wait outside for you, is what you're saying.
Right, yeah, that type. And so, you know, they said, you got to understand, everyone who has a degree of class to them or education would never find themselves associating in something happening in a tent. They would go to a hall, a presentation hall, a theater hall. And so Ellen White herself actually chastises him. And basically says, if you hadn't been so cheap and you'd properly done this with a hall, the gospel work might have been completed. It's a fascinating episode that if you ever listen to it, David Trim talks about it on the Mission 150 podcast. But I was like, man, it's not that much different than today. You know, we're like, but that works. That worked. And we're like, are we really understanding who we're trying to meet and where we're going to reach them?
Yeah. But I think we're touching on.
Yeah. I'd push
I think we're touching
on
some.
That,
go ahead, yeah. go ahead, Kyle.
No, sorry, I'm talking over you, Eric. Go for it.
No. I was just going to say, I feel like we're touching on kind of a big topic and something that relates directly to narrative filmmaking and its tool for evangelism or relationship building, is that the best films are conversation starters and they're not conversation finishers.
Yes.
And I think that's really scary for like church administration, because we need to give people like the truth and the answers. But as soon as you make a film where you present a question and then you give the answer, it's like a boring story, and it feels people push back against it because it feels like, okay, this is like propaganda, or they're giving me, they're not letting me think for myself and respecting my
You know, and it's not the contract of cinema, right? The contract of cinema is, I'm coming here to think for myself. No, I don't want you to teach me anything. I don't want you to tell me anything. I just want to sit and I want to be told a great story. And then I'm going to decide how I think and feel and what I do with that afterwards.
Wow, no, that's fundamentally different.
The second you break that contract for someone, you've lost them. They're like, oh, God, I see what you did. This was a bait and switch. Like, I'm done.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other thing with that is, if you give them all the answers, why do they need to talk to you?
Yeah, they can just like engage with that piece of media and like never actually have a relationship with a real person ever. Which
you're saying it ends the potential for a relationship.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. And I think that's partly why, you know, our church has been largely here's a in the studio video sermon essentially, you know, and part of that is obviously it's cheaper to do that, but the bigger part is that, yeah, in a sermon you can give people the answers, but in a narrative filmmaking you can't just give people at least the answer. You can present a spectrum of answers, you know, for them to wrestle with. But Kevin, I'm curious, you know, with you being basically head of Hope Studios, which you're trying to, you know, kind of push and take the church and maybe more towards that narrative filmmaking direction. I guess I'm curious from the inside. Yeah. How is that going in terms of, you know, trying to push for more films that give people that freedom to wrestle and don't just feel like a sermon that's videotaped?
Yeah. I heard a quote, a number of years back, someone who was kind of giving advice to Christian filmmakers, where they said, stop turning sermons into scripts. Like, just tell stories. Wow. Tell good stories, you know. And that's where, you know, I'm really inspired by Jesus' parables, because when you look at that, how many times, not only how many times did he just tell a story, but how many times did he tell a story and then didn't even give an explanation at the end? Like, he was like, either you're going to get it or you're going to get it maybe in a while. I mean, for some people, they didn't even get it until after he died. Like, his own disciples, to some extent, didn't understand what he was doing until way later, like, you know, after his death and resurrection. And then some of them were like, oh, he's not here to just defeat the Romans. And it was like, bro, where have you been? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's so... real. You know, there's so much power with that, because I think when we pose the questions and we lead people on a journey and we don't just give them every answer, that's how we allow the Holy Spirit to do its work. But whenever we're going in and we're saying, well, I got to tell you everything, well, we're basically saying, hey, I'm not going to give you the silence needed between you and God to work this out. I'm going to give you everything, which is actually a very I mean, traditionally, that was kind of the Catholic approach to stuff, right? Is like, you don't even need to read the Bible. You just listen to us, and we're going to tell you what is truth and what isn't. And so I love, you know, the storytelling approach with things where we're not always giving the conclusion. We're saying, okay, here's enough for you to learn from this. Now, what do you think with that? And give it that, you know, space to breathe and that space for people to discuss that. The church has been... very, very supportive of what we're doing with this, for a couple reasons. One is there is some acknowledgement of a need for it. You know, I mean, unfortunately, a lot of times our church doesn't move until it's more uncomfortable to stay where you are with things. And, you know, some of our ministries, you know, or just even our numbers, looking at it, and you start to realize, like, oh, the average age of the church is going up, and that shouldn't be a thing. You're always going to have people that are passing away, that are leaving, but you should always be getting new people coming in and younger demographics joining. And that also starts to affect the donors. you know, when you are donor driven and you're donor supported, when your donation group starts reaching the end of it and you realize you don't have a pipeline, that can push you to start making changes pretty quickly. So there were some kind of supply and demand things with that, where people were realizing, oh, hey, we need to do more than just brainstorm and talk about new methods. Like we need to actually start having some new methods, or quite frankly, we're not going to have our churches. We're not going to have the budgets anymore. And either that means people are going to not get the retirement benefits, which they've already started cutting within North America. I mean, those conversations happened a few years ago. So we're going to struggle to be able to retire our own people and or even keep them on payroll for the time being. And so then all of a sudden it becomes very real. You know, it's one thing to talk about this stuff and, oh, we need to reach the young people. We need to be out there and do evangelists, blah, blah, blah. It's one thing to talk about that in concept and then go, hey, if you don't figure this out in 5 years, your position's eliminated. And that becomes very, very real. So there's part of that need for some of this on a very serious level for, you know, sustainability. But also there's people that came in. We got new leaders who said, where are we with our missional alignment? Because if we as and now I'm making it very specific just to Hope Channel International, we as Hope Channel International are called to be the evangelistic media arm of the church. Are we really being evangelistic? Are the people that we're speaking to already in the pews, or are they pre-Adventists? You know, right. who are we actually reaching with this? And so if the only people that we're talking to are, you know, already in the church, it's not really honest to call that evangelism. Now, I'm not saying that that was the case. In fact, when we looked at the statistics, it was actually very surprising to see how many like Baptists and Methodists and Presbyterians were watching Hope Channel's content. So we had more than just Adventists that were watching this stuff. But nevertheless, you look at what's the age demographic of that in North America. And that's not the case across the board. You have places like Novo Tempo in Brazil that has a very wide, very young demographic that's represented. I mean, they can speak to, I think it's like 85% of the entire country there in Brazil. So we have examples of other places. And this goes back to that conversation that I had with them where I said, look, there's this, you know, these opportunities for storytelling, and yet we're not really engaging a younger demographic in North America. And I know that you're doing this in other places, but like, why not here? And part of it was this misalignment between the funding and the audience. And so you have this group of typically, you know, elderly donors that are conservative, they're Adventist. They're in the church. And the other thing is when you're retired, you're not required to be in the marketplace, right? Mm-hmm. You're not required to interact and engage with what is relevantly happening, in the world. You know, when the economy tanks or they're doing job cuts, if you're retired, you don't know the difference. You know, when people are talking about, oh boy, the price of whatever, I mean, unless it affects their groceries, they probably don't even feel that. You know, when we're talking about, oh, the struggles with buying a house or pay raise differences, if you're retired, again, you don't feel any of that. And so it's very easy to get disconnected from the present needs of people. And yet, if those are the people that are donating towards things, oftentimes they go, well, this is what I know in my world, in my bubble, in my friends. This is what we value. It's important to us. And that is a demographic that is important. But if that's the only one that we're talking to, then, you know, don't be wondering why it is that you're not getting donations from people that are under 65. You know, and so we kind of had this misalignment between, here's people over here that are saying, we're going to support this financially, but we always need to reach like the 20-year-old unchurched youths, right? And so they go, okay, we're going to create something for that group. I mean, case in point, you know, take a look at what happened with the Record Keeper, right? You go, oh, we're going to make something that is a style, it's a format, it, you know, reaches them. And even that, it got vetted through lots of different, I mean, it was signed off all along the way. And then they get to the end of it, and what happens? You get a donor from that group who goes, well, if you want to continue to get the, you know, six-figure checks for me or whatever they were, I don't like it. It's not for me. And because it's not for me, it shouldn't be for anyone else. So you better cut it.
Yeah.
And that's part of the issue that's happened traditionally. And so, you know, what I'm excited about what we're doing is we're saying, okay, let's find a way to realign the audience with the funding. So, you know, with the example of the hopeful, this started from donor-based funds, but then it also brought in a number of other Adventist investors who said, wow, this is really good. Like, we like what this is doing and we see the impact. This is something I can actually share with my, you know, 25 to 55 year old non-Adventist employees in my business. There's not a lot of other material I can share with them. That's something I've never had before. How do I support it? Or we've had other people that go, this is something I can actually like watch with my kids and my grandkids. And we're going to have a conversation on values that we both share. That's not something I've been able to do with other content before. And so, you know, we're getting this new support with that, but when this goes to theaters, the box office tickets and then streaming platforms and then whatever kind of other licensing deals come from that, that money's going back into the church. And now all of a sudden we're aligning the financing with the very audience demographic that it's serving. And so I think hopefully with that new business model, we're able to change the trajectory. And also we won't have something like the Record Keeper happen again. Because I want to address that very directly. I get a lot of people that are like, yeah, this is great and all, but just wait till the other shoe drops, you know, and just look at what happened with the Record Keeper, you know. And,
and
I say, well, as long as we follow this model, that actually can't happen. And it's a couple things there. It's escrow accounts and film financing agreements. So with the Hopeful, Hope Channel International does not actually own the Hopeful.
Oh, interesting.
It's owned under... I don't know. We've got several different names. There was like Advent Hope Productions that we started to kind of run it. And there's Grand 48, Kyle Portbury Films. But it's not owned by Hope Channel International. We were investors in the project. And this was something that I saw of how the industry did media differently. You know, our media ministry models have always been, okay, so let's say we need, you know, $1.4 million to do something. Well, we may only get $500,000. So we get that. We hire a bunch of people in-house. They come and work for the church. And then, you know, when we do our project with that, it's kind of the same people doing the same stuff and it starts to look the same. And then we put it on our own platforms for free. And it's typically kind of already our own people watching it.
Right.
And then we hope that someone is impacted enough that they want to give at least $500,000 or more so that we break even. Right. And that's kind of been the traditional model. But the other piece of that is that that opens the church up to a lot of liability, because if we're owning every single thing that we do, that means any one of those projects that you didn't dot a T or cross an I, someone can attempt to sue you for. And that's really opening all of God's assets up to litigation and liability. And so what I noticed in the film industry was I had been working on a variety of different projects for Netflix, NBC Universal, ABC, Hulu, you know, different very recognizable companies. And my checks never said any of those. There was always some no-name LLC. And I was like, what is this? Like, I've never heard of this company and I'll probably never hear about it again. And so I went to accounting and I said, hey guys, question, what's up with this random LLC that we all work for? And they said, oh yeah, it's standard practice. The industry, the studios never make something themselves. They always take just enough budget that's needed for the series or the film or whatever the project is. And they either open an LLC for it or they find a production company and they basically give the money to them so that that separate company can do its thing. So if something goes wrong on set, someone gets injured, someone misses something and they sue, you can't tap into the assets of Netflix, of Universal, of Disney, of Paramount. You can only tap into the assets of that limited liability company or whatever version of that that is. And so I saw that and I was like, oh, that's really interesting. And that also allows those production companies to move at light speed because they're essentially a startup. They rent office space for, say, 6 months, 8 months, a year, and then they contract the people that they need that are specific for that project. And then when they're done, those people leave and they go and move on to the next thing. And you can move very quickly. You don't have lots of committees. You don't have lots of red tape. You're not doing all these sign-offs because the risk is not as large. And I realize there's not that much difference, honestly, when you look at this between the big studios from that financial aspect and the church from that financial aspect. The difference is that when we run everything in-house through the church, we have lots of committees. We have lots of red tape. We have lots of audits. There's a lot of checks and balances, which is appropriate because you're dealing with potentially billions of dollars. And so you need to make sure that you're doing those things carefully and cautiously. But what that hinders you from on the flip side is agility. And so with this model of saying, okay, what if we take kind of that film financing approach that the studios do, and we take that money out, enough of what we need for the project, we put it into the production company and it's able to do its thing. Now it can move at the speeds it needs to move. We're actually protecting the church and its assets. And it can start to tap into things like film tax incentives. So going back to that example of, you know, $500,000, right? Old model, I get $500,000 from donors. That's all I have to work with. Put it out for free. Pray we get enough back in donors. The new model, let's say we take that $500,000. And in this case, we did our post-production in Australia, which has up to 40% tax incentive. And, you know, it's really parable of the talents. How do you take what the master gave and go about his work, but maximize that? And those are things that the church was never doing because there was always this in-house model. And so that's where I was telling them, you know, you guys got to understand it's not a lack of creativity. There are incredibly creative Adventists in the church and outside the church. It's not a lack. I would say it's not even a lack of funding. The church has money. We all know that. We see them throw it at certain things when they get really excited about it. If people are excited about it enough, they'll suddenly pay millions of dollars to ship books to places that don't have complete delivery, right? Like we'll see them do stuff. So it's not a lack of money. What it is it's a lack of doing the right business process with this. And the jump from broadcast television to film can almost be as large of a jump from radio to television.
Wow.
Right. No, that's wow. Yeah, I mean, that's cool to hear how you're, you know, in a very practical way, maximizing the dollars to, you know, in a much more efficient and industry standard way so that it can go further than it ever has in the past.
But which again is just like, it's not groundbreaking, right? Like you're just taking advantage of the things that governments set up to encourage the inflow of money into their arts economy. You know, like it's not rocket science. It's simply just if you spend a dollar, we'll give you 40 cents back.
Right.
You know?
Well, and, so I mean, a big part of it is I think, you know, obviously it's nice that Hope Studios decided to, you know, hire Kevin. Professional producer as their head rather than a pastor, right? That's not his background isn't in film and knows all those industry standards. But real quick, because Kyle, I think you have to leave.
Yes, I have to. Unfortunately, I have to jump on to the next one.
I was hoping really quick we could kind of get from you maybe is there more projects in the pipeline you guys are kind of hoping or dreaming of? You don't have to obviously share specifics, but I'm just curious, you know, your vision for the future of Hope Studios, maybe what's some stuff you guys are dreaming of for the future?
We're planning on working together again, but I mean, that's the beauty of the model, right? Like it's not, you know, Hope Studios doesn't rely on Kyle. And vice versa. You know, we come together when there's an appropriate thing to come together on. the hopeful was an appropriate thing to come together on. We've got another film in development at the moment. So I think what it allows you to do is you're not locked, they're not locked into, we can only make certain things because we hired a guy and he's the only one available to us, right? And for the flip side, for me, I'm not locked into, well, I can only make films for Hope Studios, you know? Like, and I think that that's where we've got to change as Adventists and in creative, right? Like, it's not up to the church to fund your creative lifestyle, you know? And that's a big mindset shift for people, right? Like, that's, and it's a maybe a bit of pill for people to swallow, but if you're not going out there and actively driving your own creative output and working out how you're going to be commercially viable as a storyteller, I'm sorry, it's going to be a really uncomfortable, awkward life for you moving forward, because not always are you going to want to tell stories with a church partner. Sometimes you want to tell stories that are more controversial, and you actually need to be able to go, well, you know, if I want to tell that story, then I need to tell that story. You know, the church is not in the business of filmmaking, right? And I think that that's where people's expectation gets, the church is in the business of being a church. You know, it has to do certain things for it to be in that business. Simple things like the fact that the church is a 501c, you know, like they're not for profit. So there's certain things that a church can't do. And so I think if you have an unawareness of your role and responsibility in your own creative output, you're going to get bitterly disappointed, strangely enough.
And the flip side of that also, you know, as people who have both, I mean, I only recently started working, you know, for the church like a few years ago. So as people who both also try to do things independently, there is a big struggle with some of that stuff to be able to accomplish it independently without the church. I mean, that was something that Kyle and I realized if we weren't working with the church on this project, on The Hopeful, we probably could not have gotten it into theaters.
Well, and also what's the point, right? Because it's our story, you know, like, and the whole point of our story is to push and struggle and strive together to try and get something that we couldn't have gotten separately. And I think that's the beautiful thing for me is that, you know, I had probably the best filmmaking experience of my life working with three executive producers from Hope Channel International, Hope Studios. And you're kind of like, the fact that me in this like mode of Kyle is able to say that with a straight face is beautiful. You know, like if you said to me, what's the best filmmaking experience you've ever had? I'm like, well, it's The Hopeful with my Adventist filmmaking team. Like, what a beautiful thing, right? Shocked me. And that's how it should, you know? And I think it's because we all went into it going, we understand what this is, right? Nobody was under any misconception as to what we were doing. The expectation was, well, you guys are the executive producer. You're putting in financing. The film is the film, right? And it is a for-profit venture that is going to cinema to tell a story, to engage people, right? And to give an opportunity to Adventist members that maybe they've never had before, which is, hey, here's a way that I can share the origins of my faith, the thing that is me, in a way I don't feel embarrassed about. You know, like if I'm being brutally honest, why did I want to make a great film? Because I want to sit in cinemas with people that I've known for years and not feel embarrassed about the story that's so wholly a part of who I am as a 46-year-old adult. You know, like I don't want to sit in there and cringe when something happens because I'm embarrassed about the faith that I've grown up in. I want to be proud of that. I want to be like, I don't need you to be an Adventist walking out the door, but I do want you to feel like there is a hope and a healing in the thing that I believe in that maybe you hadn't seen before. And you look at me in a different way and be like, yeah, man, like that is pretty cool, isn't it? I'm like, yeah, it is. And I really like being Adventist, you know? And so for me, the fact that I can say that in this manner now is a beautiful thing, you know? And as a as an adult wrestling and struggling with faith like we all do, being able to do that with a little bit of it's okay to be Adventist instead of, I probably wouldn't talk to you about it. If that's all as an Adventist, you walk out of the hopeful feeling, well, you know what? What a beautiful day that's going to be for you, because it has been for me.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's beautiful, awesome. Man. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you guys, so much for coming on. It's been fun.
Oh, so much fun, actually.
Talking to you guys.
This was a great chat.
We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you for your time. And yeah, I'm excited to, see where you guys are going with Hope Studios and this new release. And hopefully it's as a filmmaker myself, I really hope that it can be a catalyst and kind of a stepping stone to like bigger and greater things in the future too.
100%, hopefully. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My greatest
step into a new age of
yes.
Avenue
and my
storytelling.
Hope is actually that we all look back at this and we go, that was the moment we all realized it was okay to be Adventist and tell our story in all of these different varying ways, right? Like that would make me, and it doesn't, that's not about you. That's just about you wanting your culture to realize the beauty that is within it. Like we've bashed ourselves up for so long. It just kind of seems like, why are we doing this? Like if we all want to moan about it and go how much we hate it, then like what's the point? So I think finding the love within that beautiful, simple message that Ellen gravitated to, that Miller discovered for the first time, right? Which is literally so simple. It's a character of Christ question, right? It's like, who is Christ and what is his desire for you? Is it judgment, punitive? Is it prejudice or is it hope and healing, and I would much rather go with the hope and healing character than the other. So
that's good.
Right.
Yeah.
That's really good. Maybe you can just, plug for listeners kind of where they'll be able to find the hopeful. And then maybe for those that are listening after the, April 17, 18, kind of theatrical run, where they might, hopefully be able to find it in the future.
Yeah. Well, all the information you're going to need about any of that side of it now for April 17 and 18 cinema release across the US or what happens after is thehopefulmovie.com. If you go there, that will basically be the hub of anywhere in the world you are, you'll be able to work out how you can engage with it.
Awesome. Perfect.
But in the US right now, coming up April 17 and 18, go and press a button on that website that says buy tickets now or do a group booking.
Yeah. A group booking. I mean, that's the other thing is, if your church hasn't already looked at doing a group booking for things, there's a number of different churches that I've seen. I mean, I just spoke at Kettering Church up in Ohio last week. I think I saw Spencerville is doing this. I've seen a number of others that are, what they're doing is they're getting a group of tickets. You can go in there and you can actually get it sometimes even a group discount if you do the group booking, kind of varies by theater. But what they're doing is they're getting enough tickets for members to be able to go out in their community, talk to their friends, talk to their family, talk to their coworkers who, maybe go, hey, I don't understand why your kid never shows up to the soccer game on Friday night. Or like, what's the whole thing with like not, smoking and, really taking your health and diet seriously. Like, I don't get it. Like what are you guys Mormon, you Jehovah's Witness. I don't really understand it. And it's very easy to go to them and go, well, hey, look, we've got extra tickets, that we'd like to gift to you. Again, part of that value, that interpersonal value of, I've got a ticket. Would you like to come with us? And then let's get dinner afterward or go get ice cream or something. And then let's just go see a movie. You don't give any preamble. We don't do that for other movies. Oh, before you go see Dune, I got to give you the history of all 6 or 10 books or whatever. No, you're just like, hey, let's go see it. It sounds like it's a good story.
In fairness, that probably would help.
I don't know. I watched the original one, was not a fan of the old ones, and was like, I skipped the old ones.
Dune might be the one example where you would need a little bit of like context.
You kind
of
did. I did kind
of. If you're going to see
like
part
that.
Two, you probably, you probably need to know. A little bit,
but yeah, I wish
but with
I
this,
wish
it does not require. does not require any explanation. It's just saying, hey, I'd like to invite you to come to this event with me. And so, yeah, you know, talk to your church about that. Talk to your group or university or whatever, because conferences have evangelism budget. And so they can pay for this. And we've even had some donors come in saying, if your conference or union is wanting to really use this for evangelism, not just entertaining Adventists, but genuinely using it as an outreach tool, we are going to put in, a six-figure donation to help match that. I know there's some conferences, one conference, Florida conference recently said, you know what, we see the value in this. We're going to put in a significant amount of money ourselves. And then this donor came in and matched that. So they doubled that.
Wow.
So there's places that are using this. And that's where, you know, if your community is not using this, this is in 900 theaters across the country. You can go to the website, you can click get tickets, you can put in your zip code and see where it's showing near you. But, you know, don't miss this. Don't miss out on this.
There's an AMC literally 2 miles in the middle of Manhattan right now where I am that's carrying it for two straight days. You know, awesome. In the middle of New York, you know, there's probably 10 between Cinemark, Regal, and AMCs and boutiques in the Manhattan Island of New York City. There would be at least 10 cinemas running it.
That's awesome. Well,
yeah, what an incredible opportunity, right, to get.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
People re-inspired and also get a conversation going and get to eat food and go out. I mean, come on.
Right.
That's the best.
So if anyone wants information on that, you can also email hello@hopestudios.com. And if you want to see what other stuff we're going to be doing in the future, hopestudios.com or any of our social media pages with Hope Studios. You know, my hope, pun intended, is, you know, that the hopeful is the first of many things to come. But this has to have impact, because if this doesn't have impact, you know, it might be another decade or more before our church goes, ooh, I don't know, you know, but we should really try these new things. So if you believe in creative evangelism, like, come out and support this, you know, honestly. Yeah. So,
awesome. Well, thanks again, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Really, thank you.
Appreciate your time. And
thank you.
We're praying that everything goes well with the release. And this is, you know, a catalyst for the future.
Awesome. thank you both for having us. We really appreciate the opportunity.
Once again, thank you guys so much for listening to another episode of Seeking What They Sought. If you want to keep up with us, we exist on all the social media platforms. Our main way of communicating is Instagram, but we're also on TikTok, we're on YouTube, we're even on Facebook. For you millennials and Gen X's out there, even the boomers, we haven't forgotten about you. So we're on Facebook, you can keep up with us there as well. And if you have comments on the episode that we just posted and the discussion that was just had, you have thoughts, maybe you disagree, you have a hot take or two, feel free to send us a message through our DMs on any social media or shoot us an email. We'd love to have conversations with you guys. I also want to issue a thank you to our producer, Eric Edstrom, for making us sound pretty. He always does such a good job, man. We used to make fun of him all the time in, the early seasons. I've let him off the hook recently. I might bring him back. What do you guys think? Let me know. Let me know if we should bring him back. But Eric, we thank you so much for making us sound good. Last and not least, I would like to thank our patrons for helping us keep the lights on, for supporting us financially. We really, really appreciate your generosity. So I think that is just about it. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Seeking What They Sought.